This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, and we've got Basketball Insider back after a couple of weeks. Mike Grenier is with us. Mike, welcome back.
It's great to be back, Rick. I hope all is well with you.
Yes, and you as well. I know that you and another friend of mine, plus Bill Newell, Bill just finished a bout of COVID, so he's been under the weather. So hopefully the sun will come out one of these days.
Yeah, the sun is really out around here.
All right. Okay. Let's start with, I'm sure on Boston Talk Radio today that the end of the world is coming because, the Celtics blew a 30-point lead, and they're just horrible. They're not going to win a round against Atlanta and so on. But come on. I want to know what your thought is, because we have seen these kinds of swings all season long in the NBA. And giving up a 30-point lead, it looked to me, I was watching at the very beginning of the third quarter, I'm looking at these guys and saying, they're not even running back. They're not even going back. It looked like they just completely took the second half off, but, you know, I'm not an expert. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, you have a good point there. I mean, yes, you are an expert. You watch it closely. But what I saw was sort of what you saw. The Celtics have been building such huge leads against everybody in the league that they get casual with the lead. And it leads to bad habits, of course. When you have big leads and you blow big leads, you automatically, they're almost like hidden habits, right, Rick?
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know that you're doing these things wrong. Coach Mazzulla and the staff have to remind the guys that they're forming bad habits by taking some fourth quarter off. Even before they blew the 30-point lead against Atlanta last night, there have been several games in the past 3 or 4 weeks where they've had an 18-19-point lead, and it gets down to 4 or 5 in the fourth quarter because they can't seem to close out games. Well, they can close out games. It's just that they're way too casual. They're in the doldrums in terms of the schedule. We're 72 games into the schedule now, 10 games left. They have the best record in the Eastern Conference wrapped up. You know, unless they completely collapse and lose the next 10 games, Denver will not be able to overcome the Celtics' lead as for the best record in the NBA. So they're in the mental doldrums, I would say, in terms of putting their foot on the gas, keeping their foot on the gas, and trying to crush everybody. So a thing that happened against Atlanta was bound to happen, I thought, because there's been a series of games that have been, you know, they've gotten away with being casual. And last night they couldn't do it against Atlanta. And it was a horrible way to lose last night. It's their first blown 30-point lead in 27 years, okay? So obviously it doesn't happen too often. But I think it's in a way it's good, Rick, because if I could play the devil's advocate here, because it gives them a jolt of reality that if they do take 20 minutes off in the second half, they can lose even to a mediocre team like Atlanta. So therefore, what happens in the playoffs when they play the Atlanta, you know, when they play the Milwaukee Bucks or the Miami Heat or the Knicks or whatever in the Eastern Conference, they can't take time off. They can't not take time off from minute 1 through minute 48. They just can't take time off because these teams are good. The Celtics have the team that has a target on its back. So everyone's going to try to bring their best shot at them, particularly in the playoffs. So that's what it comes down to. I think, you know, they have another shot at Atlanta now. Who made up the schedule, by the way, Rick, right?
I know.
NBA, 6 consecutive road games, and I know that supposedly, quote, they're easy games, when in reality, when you're on the road for 6 straight games, I don't think anything is easy. So they have Atlanta again in a couple nights in Atlanta, and then they still have to play New Orleans in New Orleans, and New Orleans is a pretty good team. And then I believe they have another bad team after that. Then they finally come home next week. So they're on the road. They're in the mental doldrums. They want to get the regular season over with. That's my basic take on this. They want to get the regular season over with and move on to the playoffs. And, of course, if you look at it beyond the 10 or 11 guys that they were using last night, my biggest concern is the injury to Jrue Holiday.
Yeah, I agree, and I was reading something about that today, but I can't get an update on that, and I guess it has to do with the shoulder, and he supposedly has a dead arm and it needs rest, but that sounds a little suspicious, of course.
I agree, because no one with medical authority has chimed in and said, okay, this type of injury will require 2 weeks rest or 3 weeks rest or whatever. Like you said, it sounds suspicious, and to me it is suspicious because no one has taken responsibility or to account for how much time he's going to take off or needs to be off. Drew Holiday is a real warrior. I think he wants to play, but he's missed 5 games already, and no one is saying up front how much longer he's going to be out.
I'm not going to worry about that until I have to worry about that, okay?
Right.
Because I don't know, and you know what he said was – what Holiday said, well, he just needed rest, and I'll take him at his word for that.
Yeah.
But we'll see, and that's the other thing I want to point out is that everything you just said about last night's game I agree with. I think if it had to happen, this is probably a good time for it to happen, rather than at the very end of the season or the beginning of the playoffs. The other thing is you mentioned closing out games. Years past, last year in particular and the year before, Celtics would have a big lead. They would lose those games that you mentioned, you know, that they dropped down to 4 points and then went on to win. So there is a, you know, they're a better team. There is that. And I also think, given the fact that it was yet another patched-up lineup, not that they're not good, because they are, but it was another lineup, even though they gelled perfectly in the first half, they didn't look good in the second half. And there was nobody sort of stepping on the pedal, as you say. Nobody was captaining that second half last night. And I think that's something where either Drew Holiday or Derek White would have been able to do.
Right, exactly. And I think that, like, you know, we saw Tatum get 37 points again last night and try to lead them to the win. At the end, he was trying to take over the fourth quarter.
Right.
But then we have to point out, you don't want to hang a loss on one guy, but in terms of basic basketball, what Jaylen Brown did on one of the final possessions where somebody actually posted a video, Rick, he dribbled 23 times in the 24 seconds, and then he threw up a shot that was had barely a chance of making it. And you wonder if he was just trying to own the game at that point and try to win it for them, or was this a byproduct of the other four guys not moving around and trying to get open?
Yep, good point.
Sometimes, as we know, the Celtics will hand the ball to Tatum or Jaylen Brown, and everyone watches them because they can be so explosive and so creative. But it's probably not the best fundamental basketball you can play. You want to see guys cut into the basket, whether it's Porzingis or Horford or whoever. And they just get caught up sometimes in this one-on-one isolation ball. And I think that's something that's going to need to be addressed at the end of this regular season, because as a reminder, in a playoffs, that you're not going to win in the long run by playing isolated hero ball.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't work.
If that happens once every 10 or 20 games, I'm not worried about it, because Brown and they have both shown tremendous growth this season. So, you know, one bad game, you're right. Was that him just trying to take the game over, or was there no movement? And I'll tell you what, I think there was no movement. I don't think there was any movement.
There was no movement. And sometimes they get caught up watching Jason Tatum do the same thing.
Yeah.
And the other, I guess I can't say it's a little thing, but Jaylen Brown, his free throw shooting concerns me.
Yep.
You know, he's 2-for-4, I believe, last night. We've seen many times where he shoots 3-for-6 or 4-for-7 or something like that. And they can get away with it when they beat, you know, somebody by 18 points. But you're not going to get away with that in the fourth quarter against Miami when it's a 3-point game, you know, or the Milwaukee Bucks or the Denver Nuggets. I don't know how we can improve it, Rick, because, you know, he's been around a long time now. But his free throw shooting is 70%, which for a guy with his skill level is really hard to believe, because he's got the skill. He makes all kinds of crazy jump shots, right?
Yeah.
And three-pointers, and why can't he just go to the foul line when no one's around him, concentrate, and make 80% of his free throws?
Well, you know,
70%.
The way he's grown, Mike, he's an older player now. He's not a kid anymore. But the way he's grown, it seems when he concentrates on improving in an area, it gets improved on. So am I right?
Every year he's come up with a new tactic, a new strategy, a new way to get to the basket, a new way to – I mean, his mid-range jumper this year has been tremendous.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe, you know, if that gets high on his priority.
His free throw shooting remains consistently – subpar for a player of his caliber, right?
Yeah. Well, the good news is, a lot of good news. One of the things I like is the fact that during that winning streak, eight games, whatever it was, they had eight different lineups. And that is impressive.
Yes, and you know what? We should underscore one guy in particular, Rick. little god, Peyton Pritchard.
Oh, my.
his old Oregon team almost advanced in the NCAA tournament. But Peyton Pritchard, since Holiday has been out, five games, Peyton Pritchard is averaging slightly over 18 points per game in those five games. And not only that, we've seen him go to the basket as if he was a 6'5" version of Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, he takes it to the basket. He goes around big men. He makes crazy layups. He hits three-pointers. He's the pacemaker on the offense. In other words, he's running the show as the point guard, and he's played magnificently. And I guess if there's a positive to come out of Jrue Holiday's injury, not that there's never really a great positive out of it, it's the fact that Peyton Pritchard has grown more confident, and Joe Mazzulla can go to him in the playoffs when anyone needs a blow at the guard position, and he can give him not these, you know, these tentative minutes where he doesn't know what he wants to do. He's a very confident player right now, and I think Mazzulla can use him in any playoff situation whatsoever because he's played the best basketball of his career by far, in my opinion.
He's a two-way player, which I think is fantastic. And let me ask you about Sam Hauser, his confidence in offense. In fact, the team's confidence in him on offense has grown. How is his overall game?
His overall game has been, I think, again, a little like Peyton Pritchard. He's a different kind of player. He's not going to take it to the basket as much as Peyton Pritchard. But there was that one game a couple weeks ago, we hit 10 three-pointers, and it was actually, you know, I remember he had 10 three-pointers with 9.5 minutes left in the third quarter. And the team was feeding him, and I thought he was on his way to... Steph Curry had 13 threes in the game. That's been his top game. And the all-time record is Klay Thompson with 14. And he was certainly on a pace to tie or break either of those accomplishments. But he got... Remember, he injured an ankle while taking a three-pointer in the corner, and he went out, and I think he missed the game right after that. And then there was a subsequent game where he hit 7 of 8 or 8 out of 9 attempts on three-pointers. So he is definitely a legit three-point threat that Mazzulla can use in the playoffs. So then again, you're talking two players, especially off the bench, that Mazzulla can go to with tremendous amount of confidence, I think, in Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser. Both of them have done it over the long term this season. It's not just like they've done it lately. They have provided those points and those positive accomplishments throughout the season in various ways. So I think those two guys, I think Mazzulla say, okay, our bench is in good shape, particularly with those two guys.
If it weren't for Al Horford, even one of those guys could be the sixth man of the year for the Celtics.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Horford gets that for sure.
Style, different players, but, you know, the other guy, of course, is, you know, who's been injured, Rick, is Porzingis, and he's missed, like, what, 21 or 22 games. He's missed about 30% of the team's games, and to me, that's always a concern because people are basically saying, you know, they're resting him for the playoffs, or they're giving him some sort of they're calling out injuries that he doesn't really have. But, you know, that may be partially true, but obviously his injury history is real. In previous teams, whether he's with the Dallas Mavericks or the Knicks, and you say, okay, so do we have to be concerned about him in the playoffs? And I guess to a certain degree we have, because it's not like it's just this year that he's been injured. It's been previous years as well. So we'll see how it plays out in the playoffs. Will he be strong and healthy enough to play all 20 games or whatever it's going to require to win a championship? That remains to be seen. But I think it's a little bit of a concern. What do you think, Rick?
Well, I do, but on the other hand, the fact that he's been out so much and Luke Kornet has gotten better and more trustworthy, and Al Horford has been out, you know, on the plan, that those two guys have worked together very well, and I think that I'm not as concerned if Porzingis misses a game or two here or there, but for the playoffs, you need him for at least two-thirds of the games, I would think. And what I want to ask you is, if Porzingis is out, then how do you work that center position? I mean, you know, Luke Kornet is Luke Kornet. He's a great fill-in. Al Horford is tremendous, but they don't make up a Porzingis.
They don't, but that's the reality of the NBA. Any great starter, you can't really replace him no matter what position, but especially with the big men. I mean, Porzingis, we've seen him post inside how many times this season, Rick, and smaller defenders just can't guard him when he takes a mid-range jumper or a short jump shot, and also too, he takes it to the basket and draws fouls. So Can Horford do that? Oh, he's got the savvy, and he still has the athleticism and skill to draw fouls. But he just can't play 35, 36, 38 minutes. He can do it in the pinch, and I think he would do it in the pinch, and he'd do fine against the Bucks or the Miami Heat or anybody. But, you know, I think you point out a guy, Cornette, who's a little bit similar to Pritchard and Hauser. His confidence has been boosted this year because he's had to play injury minutes, guys who have been injured, and he's come through with some. He had a 13-rebound game past week. 8 points, 10 rebounds, 6 points, 9 rebounds. That's a nice contribution from a guy who a year ago we might have thought he'll never get off the bench for the playoffs. But,
right.
You know, I think Mazzulla has more confidence in him this season because he's been forced to play more minutes. But the bottom line is, Rick, I think we want Porzingis to be available for 80-90% of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, in a short series, 7 games, Jalen Brunson gets hot or something, and the Knicks all of a sudden take a 2-1 lead in the series, and the Celtics are in a near panic mode. Or you know, Jimmy Butler goes off for Miami, and the Celtics all of a sudden find themselves tied 2-2 in that series. And it's a little bit worrisome if Porzingis is missing Game 5. So you got to hope that they're managing Porzingis' minutes and putting out injuries that are like sort of minor injuries where he would play through them in the playoffs. You hope that's the case. And Porzingis himself seems to indicate that he's going to be fine for the playoffs. So we have to take him at his word at this point.
And a healthy lineup, a healthy Celtic lineup, is without question the best talent in the league. And they play together probably as good as any team, if not better than all other teams. So let me ask you one more question. And given these injuries, like D. White is on the bench and Jrue Holiday is on the bench, and they're huge contributors, and they're just super players. What do we get from the other two guys, Brissett and Tillman?
Not much lately. I've been a little bit disappointed that Tillman hasn't been used more, for one thing. And when he has been out there, he's shown flashes of what he can do. He's a big, he's a strong rebounder. He's a wide body. He gets physical, and all that. But surprisingly, he hasn't gotten many minutes. You know, and Brissett, I think, is shown to be a good offensive rebounder and a defender. However, you know, I saw him make a three-pointer the other night, and I was kind of surprised because he's not really a superb shooter. So. I don't know how much you can count on him, and I don't know how deep Mazzulla would want to go in the playoffs, whether he'd play either player very much. My guess right now, based on what we've seen, is they won't play very much in the playoffs.
Well, he better play Hauser and Pritchard, which he didn't do last year.
So. Yeah, and of course, we mentioned Derek White, and that's another factor, is that, to me, Derek White, who played a year ago, was very good, but the Derek White who's playing for the Celtics this year is, are these measurables? I don't know. He looks like he's 30 or 40% better than a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a candidate for the all-defensive team. He's just a great defender. He's a great shot blocker for his size. And his three-point shooting has definitely improved. The way he runs the team at times, if he's the point guard, he knows what to do. And Rick, you know, he kind of reminds you, like, let's say, of other guys who can hit that little runner into the lane.
And, oh, yeah.
You're in motion, you're in front of the foul line, the defenders are coming at you, and he lays the ball up off the glass, or, you know, that you have to have a real delicate touch to make that running shot in the paint, and he does that really often and does it very well.
You know what?
It just reminds you know, to me, he's improved a heck of a lot since a year ago.
You know what that shot reminds me of? Have you ever watched curling in the Olympics where they push the puck, the stone, I think it's called, down, hurling or curling, whatever it is, curling. They push the stone down the ice, and then they just let it go. They just let it go, and it goes, you know, where and that's what D. White's floater is. He heads toward the basket up in the air, and he just kind of lets it go.
Yeah, that's a real skill that you have to have to make sure that while you're floating, somehow you're releasing the ball, and it's going to go in the basket. And a lot of his floaters go in clean. They're not rattling off the rim.
I know.
So he's obviously worked on his game in the past year to improve it and be an even bigger factor for the Celtics. And I give him a lot of credit for that because he's certainly a tremendous part of that rotation. I mean, of course we count on Jaylen Brown and Tatum to score and Porzingis, but Derek White some nights, as you know, he takes over a game. He can score 25, 28 points. It doesn't surprise us anymore when he gets 22 or 24 points. And to me, that's a great guy to have in your lineup. When if one of your other main guys is having an off shooting night, Derek White can take some of those shots and hit them.
I think there's going to be a game. Hopefully it's in the playoffs where Holiday does the same thing. I think you're going to see him go off the charts eventually in a game to bail them out. He is he can do it. He just hasn't needed to.
Right, exactly. Well, you know what? He's shooting 44% on threes this year, which is by far the best of his career. And that's because he's basically passing the ball, and he's playing great defense. But if he needs to score, he tries to step up and score. But his shot-making on the threes has gone way up this year. It's a career high, 44%. That ranks up there with the greatest shooters, the three-point shooters in the league. He just doesn't take a whole lot of them because, you know, he's not taking as many shots per game as Tatum or Brown or Derek White.
All right. Next time we talk, next week, we're gonna expand it to the league as we head toward the playoffs. But right now I want to turn our attention to the March Madness. I'm not a great follower of March Madness, but I did watch Purdue on Sunday.
Right.
And that guy in the middle is fearsome.
Zach Edey, yes. He's a very good player. I think there was a lot of Purdue fans were very fearful of how the team would do in the tournament this year, because last year they were a number one seed. They lost to a number 16 seed, and that hadn't happened. That only happens like twice ever. So there was a little bit of fear in the Purdue fans' hearts, I think, when the team entered the tournament this year. But they're playing much better right now, and they're a number one seed, and they're doing extremely well so far. With Zach Edey in there, they're going to have a shot at winning all the games. However, my personal favorite to win it all is the defending champion UConn Huskies. They look like they have every available type of player they need. They have a big man, Klingon. He's a 7'2" sophomore who is a shot blocker and a shot maker. He's just not very athletic. He's sort of like a Luke Kornet with more skills, you know. And he's the hub of that offense and defense. And they have Tristan Newton. They have 3-point shooters. They have guys who can control the ball and fast break. They score a lot of points, and they defend ferociously. I think the Big East is a league where the competition throughout the regular season is so ferocious that when you go into the NCAA tournament, it almost seems like, hey, this is easy to play hard, because they play hard all year. UConn is really a team to be reckoned with. I think they can win it all again. University of Houston, I saw them play two nights ago, and they looked legit. They had to go to overtime to win, but they only lost two or three games all year. They have a ridiculous record, like 34-3 or something like that. And they could also win it because of their athleticism, but they tend to not be an intelligent team. The other night, three of their starters fouled out, and a fourth guy had four fouls, so they have to watch themselves on the defensive end. But they certainly have a lot of athleticism, a lot of skill. But I kind of see Purdue making the Final Four, but I also think UConn, to me, is the favorite to win it all. They're really good. Marquette is also an outstanding team out of the Big East, second to UConn. But every time they face UConn this year, UConn has been able to handle them. So, you know, I like UConn.
All right, what about UConn women?
UConn women are very good. I saw them play for a while last night. I still think South Carolina, though, has to be an overwhelming favorite. I think they're like 34-34-0, 35-0. And, of course, over in Iowa, you have Caitlin Clark, who's still playing fantastic. And, by the way, Rick, I might be seeing Caitlin Clark this Friday. We're thinking of going out to Albany, or Saturday, excuse me, because we want to catch the Notre Dame women, who are a number two seed and playing well. They're in the Sweet 16. They're playing on Friday, and, of course, Iowa is playing on Saturday against Colorado. So we might make the trip to Albany, New York for the regional championships out there. So, but, yeah, as far as the women are concerned, I think South Carolina has to be a really huge favorite, I believe. I think LSU, last year's champion, is on the doorstep as well. It could give them a great game. They've already played each other, and South Carolina won. But those, to me, are the two teams that have to be favored on paper, and, you know, they both want to win it. I think UConn could sneak in there maybe. If they have an above-average performance, they could steal a win from one of those two teams. But we shall see. I like all of those teams. I also like Iowa, although I don't think they're as good as a year ago. And Caitlin Clark would have to have like a 45-point game, I think, for them to reach the NCAA final. Well, she can capable of doing it, but also her teammates have to step up. Last night they had trouble. They had a lot of trouble in last night's game. They finally won by 8 or 9 points, but they've struggled in the tournament.
You know, a couple of things I want to ask you. And first, I have to compliment you on and your bride. It's going out to Albany, you know, in what could be a blizzard. Who knows at this time of year, rather than going down to Bermuda, you know.
Right.
So you guys still have it. I just love that enthusiasm and that love for the game and love for the sport. But I want to ask you just before we finish up here, and maybe we'll take a quick look at the high school tournament. But in your coverage of the Celtics when you were a beat coverage reporter, if you will, can you recall a time, maybe in the Bird era or otherwise, when in fact the Celtics did what they did last night? In other words, lose focus, just, you know, relax and not really pay attention to business because, you know, they didn't win 75 games.
No, they did not. The best team, of course, was the 1985-86 team, 68-14. Actually, this year's Celtics team, if not, you know, they still have, what, 10 games left? They could win 7 or 8 of those games and finish with 65 wins. That wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. So who's to complain? We shouldn't complain about that. As Celtics fans, you shouldn't complain. However, I do recall the 85-86 team having that focus where not only did they win 68 games, but they finished, counting the playoffs, 50 wins and one loss at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we call being totally focused,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall that team ever relaxing. And some of the other teams that won titles, yeah, they would relax and lose the game. I mean, we're talking 40 years ago. I can't remember specific games. However, I remember going to a couple playoff games where they had a 2-0 lead. They went to Milwaukee, I remember, and they lost two very close games, and they kind of lost them down the stretch. I can specifically remember Kevin McHale missing a follow-up that would have won the game with him with 3 or 4 seconds left. And because of that, the series was extended, and Milwaukee had a new life. And it was the easiest shot in the world, and Kevin McHale, it rattled off the rim and came out. But not a case of relaxing. It's just that he missed a shot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, occasionally the Celtics took nights off. But when you had, to me, when Larry Bird was there, you didn't take too many nights off because he was there to remind you not to take the night off. And I don't know if the Celtics, Tatum is the closest person, I think, that would assume that role and tell the guys, we're not taking tonight off. Jaylen Brown, I think, would do it too. But they don't have that strongest personality, as strong a personality in that regard as Larry Bird did.
Well, I think the other guy, too, is Robert Parrish. He'd eat you alive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, he would. But Bird was the leader in so many ways.
Right.
He wouldn't let you take a night off because he didn't take a night off. He played in tremendous pain. Kevin McHale played with a broken foot. To this day, he limps because he broke his feet, and he played through injuries. When he probably, there's no question the doctors told him not to play, and he played through injuries in the playoffs, and he's paid off. He's paid for that in his post-playing career by having a permanent limp.
Mm. You know? Well, maybe someone will talk to Max or have Max talk to the team about taking a night off, and then you can't do it this time of year, or at least in the next couple of weeks. Okay, finally, Mike, your thoughts on the high school playoffs, because I know you did follow at least one team.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, Worcester North won it for the second straight year. Great team, but they had to go to overtime to beat Xaverian, which is a team that, like, the team that I follow here in Lawrence, Central Catholic, my nephew, 6'10", played for them. But Xaverian had a great tournament. Worcester North won it all. BC High was very good, Catholic Memorial. But the team that I should mention, because he's a former Danvers coach, John Walsh, Malvern Catholic, they breezed through Division II for the second straight year. And here's the guy, John Walsh, who coached Danvers to 3 state titles, and he's coached Malvern Catholics to 3 state titles. That guy, as a coach, and he coached at Central Catholic for a couple of years, has 6 championships, and he's still a relatively young guy. And in Division II, Malvern Catholic has been untouchable. And John Walsh, has, of course, has those local roots, having been a Danvers coach back in the earlier 2000s. And, you know, Danvers has not ever been a basketball town until he came aboard. And he turned that program around by reaching out to the youth sports and building a program that won. It was such fun to go to the Boston Garden and see Danvers win state semifinal games when in the previous 20 or 30 years they couldn't sniff the Boston Garden unless they bought a ticket, you know? he's done a wonderful job over at Malvern Catholic. I know some people are saying Malvern Catholic recruits, they bring in kids from all over the place, they're a private school, and those are always murky waters that require further investigation, right, Rick? So we don't know exactly how those players got there, but all I know is that he's won consistently, and no one's throwing him out of the league, you know?
Great point, great point. Yeah, that's an amazing record, and I know, you know, we dealt with him when he was at Danvers High School, and that was fantastic. Mike, before I let you go, any final thoughts on anything that's up in that sports brain of yours?
Well, I'm hoping to see Caitlin Clark because, you know, she's a once-in-a-life. You talk about your generational players. I'm hoping that we get out there to see her on Saturday. That's the plan right now. And, you know, I've loved Notre Dame for the past 60, 65 years, and they have a great women's program, as we know, and they're fun to watch, and they won a couple national titles. And, you know, we went to Albany a year ago, Rick, for the regionals when the men played out there, and we got to see UConn twice. And they played such a strong brand of basketball that we walked away when they made the Final Four thinking they're going to win it all, and they did. And it was that college atmosphere when you have the bands playing and you're meeting 17,000 people from various parts of the country and everyone's enthusiastic about their own team. It's one of the best takes in America, I think, when you go to March Madness games, men or women.
Look forward to the report next week. That's Basketball Insider Mike Grenier with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.